You're listening to a podcast from the RSA. You can find out more about RSA events and projects and how to get involved with the fellowship by visiting our website, thersa.org.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Claire Devaney. I'm a fellow and associate of the RSA. It's my very great pleasure to welcome you here this evening for our special event, which is the Bicentenary Medal presentation and lecture. The RSA has been awarding the Bicentenary Medal since 1954 to commemorate the founding of the RSA over 200 years earlier. Previous winners recognised for their outstanding contributions to the advancement of design in industry and society are Cameron Sinclair and Kate Storr of Architecture for Humanity for empowering disadvantaged and devastated communities worldwide, and Dr. Barry Quirk, Chief Executive of Lewisham Council for Innovation in Public Service Design. The Bicentenary Medal is awarded to a person who has made an outstanding contribution through the use of design to increase the resourcefulness of people and communities. Susan Woodward, OBE, or RSU as we call her, founding director of the SHARP project and the SPACE project, is awarded the 2014 medal, and it's my very great honour and privilege to welcome her to the RSA this evening for this presentation event. A round of applause, please, for Sue. Sue is creative media champion for the City of Manchester, and her pioneering work in regeneration and in the creative and digital industries has enabled professionals, startups, apprentices, young people across the Greater Manchester region and beyond to engage in, interact with, and contribute to the digital media economy. Sue's career began as a newspaper journalist working in Liverpool, moving up to Fleet Street at just 23. Later, she moved into television and worked for ITV, the BBC and Channel 4 before becoming managing director of ITV Granada in 2003. I first met Sue in 2007 when she was chair of the Health is Wealth Commission, a high-profile investigation into the health and economic status of the Liverpool City region, for which I was part of the secretariat team. I remember very clearly making the long and arduous journey across the Rubicon from Liverpool to Manchester with the rest of the team to visit Sue in her office on the top floor of the Granada building, armed with reams of economic data and statistics, which we duly presented, having been very nervous of meeting the famous Sue for the first time. That's great, team. Well done. But what are we going to do about the Siggy Man in Highton Village who flogs fags out of a sports bag? This initial and brief exchange, as well as being the first time I'd realised with delight that Sue was from Liverpool, taught me three things about her which stand to this day. First, that she always looks for the human story, perhaps a journalistic instinct. But she is absolutely about people, individuals, communities, and has a wonderful sense and empathy for how things will impact on people's lives. Second, that she has an insatiable thirst for knowledge. Our reams of stat that day just weren't enough for Sue, and even now when I see her really animated, it's because she's found some new way of doing something, or an innovation, or a new story, or fascinating fact that she wants to share with me. Third, and most importantly, I think, there is absolutely no room with Sue for what our American cousins might call BS. I think it goes without saying she's a very shrewd businesswoman, and fillers and fluff just won't do. It's best to stick to the facts and the truth, even if work has not been done, which might have been the case over the years, or there's trouble to be dealt with. These are traits I have come to value as a friend, and whether it's seeing Sue in action in the boardroom or in a hard hat on site at her latest building venture, these are qualities of which I am professionally in awe. 5 or 6 years ago, when I just started to work in Manchester, because we're all Mancunians now, a colleague mentioned to me in conversation some wise advice she'd received from her mentor, one Sue Woodward. But Sue's my mentor, I said territorially. Of course, this has happened a good dozen times since, and I now know that there's a legion of us who benefit from Sue's time and genuine interest, positive encouragement and sage advice. For that, on behalf of Team Sue, I'd like to offer my sincere and heartfelt thanks. In her lecture this evening, Sue will demonstrate how initiatives like the SHARP project and SPACE projects are nurturing Manchester's creative talent and ambition at the forefront of the Northern Powerhouse. Afterward, there will be time for discussion and questions. But before we hear from Sue, Please join me in welcoming RSA Trustee and Chair of the Fellowship Council, Irene Campbell, to the stage to make the medal presentation. Thank you very much.
Good evening, everybody. I feel very privileged to have been asked to present the medal to Susan this evening. Susan, it gives me great pleasure to present you with the 2014 Bicentenary Medal for using design to transform the creative economy and build more resilient communities. In addition, I'm delighted to be able to offer you honorary life membership of the RSA, which I think is a real honour, and I do envy you that. And I'm really, really looking forward to hearing your presentation this evening. So, Susan, here you are. You're a deserving winner.
Good evening, everybody. First of all, thank you very much for the RSA for awarding me the Bicentenary Medal. I am more than flattered and delighted and very grateful. Thank you very much, everyone who's travelled here tonight from London and from further afield, and particularly thank you to my guests and colleagues from Manchester who've made not just a train journey today, but actually a much longer journey with me, a journey that's seen a transformation of a part of East Manchester that was derelict and in despair, and together as a team, with the fortitude and patience with me and passion, we've built it together. So in some small part, this medal is shared with my team here tonight. Thank you, guys. I'm really grateful. So what is the SHARP project and the SPACE project all about? It's about taking hold of a piece of Manchester that perhaps was looking in on a city where there were skyscrapers developing new businesses and new opportunities for a small and select group of people. East Manchester was the very first place to have a regeneration company. In fact, its chief executive, Eddie Smith, who has been a guiding light to me across the whole of the 5 years I've been building SHARP and SPACE, was chief executive of that development company. And he and a small team had a giant task, which was to take a derelict post-industrial piece of wasteland in a city and transform it. It takes 25 years to do that. Actually, it was the longest surviving urban regeneration company, which sadly was closed when this current government was elected, but nonetheless achieved more extraordinary things, a joint venture with the Abu Dhabi government to build out space outside Manchester City, new academies, new swimming pools, new schools, you know, a testament to extraordinary amounts of work for Manchester City Council. So what is it about Manchester City Council who take this kind of level of risk? Well, I suppose that's where my story is introduced. I was the managing director of Granada Television, and after quite a long time there, left to start up what was then to be a creative consultancy. And the first piece of work I was asked to do was by the city, Sir Richard and Sir Howard Bernstein, both lead the city and have done since the 1996 bomb. And they came to me with a proposition, with a proposal to say, what should we do now to help our creative economy go forward? And so I wrote what I thought would be a 10-page proposition, and that would be the end of the matter. But instead, they came to me and said, we like your proposition and we understand what you're trying to explain, that in the world of difficult economic times, with a creative industry going through transformational technological changes, that they thought their city needed to do something to house this new business. And remember, this is a time when the iPad hadn't been invented. Facebook, FaceTime just simply didn't exist. The iPhone was only a year old. And yet they were brave enough then to actually take the opportunity to read a proposition that said in this new world, several things would change. Number one, no one in the creative sector had any money, but the public purse was empty. So how could you do things cheaper and more effectively? Two, creative people like to work in a collegiate and a cooperative way, and therefore they need a different kind of physical environment in which to explain, explore, and work together up their ideas. And yet there were no places like that in Manchester. There were very expensive, flashy offices, or they were kind of dripping with damp and condensation small offices, but nowhere you could come together as a collective to think differently. And so the proposal said this: we need to create a new physical environment in which people cooperate, collaborate, work together. And they said, here's something we'd like to show you. And this was it. You know they say never look a gift horse in the mouth? This was a set of buildings in East Manchester that the city had bought as a strategic land purchase to protect the integrity of a very flash business park that sits behind.
This site was about 250,000 square foot of a building that had been an industrial distribution warehouse. It had been locked up for a long time, literally locked up, the key turned, the lights turned off, but the carpets left, and in those intervening years, it had been taken over by rain, rats, and lots of horrible things I won't share with you tonight. But the city had an idea for it, and at that time, they decided what they wanted to do is to share with a property developer the vision to build TV studios. And so as I joined that, that was the proposal on the paper. But this was 2008, and this was the year of the Lehman's crash. And at that point, everything fell off the cliff. Building in Britain stopped. There was no money, and everybody was risk-averse, so nobody wanted to take a chance on anything that could possibly incur further costs and not deliver for the city. So it was time to start again with a different plan. So the city needed a new idea and evidence to pitch an economic case for funding. So a business case was written, but there needed to be much more than that. To explain what the Sharp project could be, to explain to you, this was the home of the Sharp Electronics European Distribution Warehouse Scheme. So we called it the Sharp project to start with. It stuck. We like it. There'll be more projects in the years to come, so we should get used to the project analogy. So they gave me the building and they said, how can this help drive the creative and digital sector? And I said, they need to be driven a different way. So new businesses need new talent, and new talent need to understand the world of technology. So we're moving from an analog world into convergence, into digital, where everything is digital. Everything will be compressed and digitized. And actually, that reduces the barrier to entry for young people. So it meant that no longer to make a TV program or to get a piece of content to market, you had to own a satellite dish, or you had to buy a TV license or bid for a government-owned TV license. You could actually, in the future, I said, simply log on, load up and transmit from things not yet invented, the iPad. And they believed that. They took the risk. So here we go. This is what the building looked like originally. So working with a very small team, Alistair Weir and James Hackett from PRP, who were the architects, Gary Nesbitt, who came over from Mace as a project manager, handheld by Eddie Smith, who I apologise now, Eddie, for all the horrible things I put you through. You know what I mean. We decided we need to create a vision, but something you could see, touch, that was tangible, to actually explain in this new world of post-Lehman's, of post-crash, of needing to be collaborative, of needing to be cooperative, we needed to actually create something to see how the new world of work would be. That didn't exist when we made that CGI video. It was all completely invented in heads that was then translated through computer graphic imagery into a piece of content. This is the real thing. We actually built what you've just seen on that CGI piece of tape. We set out to make a vision real. And it's remarkable to look back today to see how this video actually is somewhere now where we have 60 companies with 600 people, which turns over millions of pounds a year and has completely transformed this part of East Manchester. The Sharp project was built around this thought that space with power and connectivity will be critical in this new age where everything was converged with digital technologies. So the Sharp project was set up to be a place of collaboration and cooperation. Real businesses making real money, but sometimes recognising that coming together in partnership meant that they could aim for bigger fish, bigger clients, make a bigger smash into the pool, but still encouraging business competition even through that collaboration. Secondly, the lines between content makers from drama to gaming were blurring, becoming translucent. Actually, now they just don't exist at all. So from drama to gaming to web design to apps, all would merge them together. So we needed all those players in one space, which was the Sharp project. But also, we recognise that in the world where you were going to have gamification of drama or the jamification of gaming, we actually need to bring that analogue, old-style audience who create TV dramas to meet the new kids on the block who are inventing stuff that hadn't been thought of by mainstream television. So we needed to build stages as well, and we did. We created network TV drama with clients like the BBC, ITV, Channel 4, Sky. We make Fresh Meat at the Sharp Project. We make Mount Pleasant for Sky One. This Christmas, you may have seen on BBC Two what will be the BAFTA award-winning Victoria Wood movie for TV, the song we sang. We made that at the Sharp Project in what was, until recent years, a derelict set of warehouses. Probably the best bit, and the bit that sums up the Sharp Project in a very unique way, was we wanted to create a different way of working and therefore a unique working environment for those digital startups. And we based on the legend invented, I think, in Alistair and R's own lunchtime, that both Google and Apple were created in a double garage in California. We thought we needed that kind of environment, but there were not really many double garages then in Newton Heath in East Manchester. So we decided to have our own version, and it is these shipping containers. We bought them in, we played around with them, we refabricated them, we made them into a very, very desirable office design. And then we put them inside the main warehouse, flanking both sides of our main high street, the internal high street, where everyone walked to their place of work. We call that, in a sort of adventurous way, the Avenue of Opportunity. Although on some days, I have to tell you, in the wettest summer on all records, where it rained for 14 consecutive weeks when we took the roof off, it felt like the rainy road to ruin. But virtually overnight, we created a huge demand for shipping containers, with even today, they're full, and we have a waiting list of clients that want to come in. They take great, great pride in individually designing their own shipping container. And that was another part of the important statement of creating shipping containers as a place to go to work. They were affordable, they were distinctive, they were the nucleus of the vision, that by working alongside each other, together, cheek by jowls, companies could be stronger. And that competition was good, and making money was the entire point, because a strong economy creates jobs and job opportunities and helps raise ambition and aspiration, both much needed in East Manchester. And that's the whole point. Regeneration isn't just about the physical. It is about the emotional. It is about our greatest asset, and that is our people. That collaboration was a powerful way to achieve success. So when our clients came in, our tenants, those sharpenistas, we gently encouraged those first footers to work together, to buy from each other, to utilise all of the skills we lured into the Sharp project. And to make sure that was effective, we selected every single client and tenant that came in. And we actually had to create a phrase to measure, would they fit into our ethos? Would they actually be able to share and collaborate with their neighbour next door? And we had a test, and the test was our tenants had to make, move or manipulate content locally and globally, digitally, which sounds like a very broad test and measure. In fact, it's extremely narrow, and it was incredibly selective. So when we brought our tenants in, we actually made sure there'd be somebody in the building that they could benefit in a business way by collaborating with, and vice versa. It sounds easy now, but actually in an economic downturn, to turn away tenants who were prepared to pay rent because you don't believe they will fit and help develop the philosophy was a very risky stage of the business. It's big business in Manchester. Our creative industries are thriving. We employ over 70,000 people across 6,000 businesses, with conservative estimates predicting a further 11,000 jobs created by 2020. 10,000 students studying over 300 media and digital courses. We have 300 new companies in this sector forming each year. There's £3.5 billion investment in the sector. Sharp and Space are a small part of that. And the total gross value added in this region, in this sector, is estimated to be £1.64 billion. We are big business. We are not fluffy heads. Creative and digital makes jobs that are sustainable, worthwhile, with good salaries, and we export knowledge. We are a great industry for UK PLC. But it is more. It's more than that. It's about creating communities of interest that turn all that dry data into exciting and dynamic businesses. So creating the environment for them to flourish, letting them bring the dog to work. That, by the way, is Bella, the dog, who belongs to one of our tenants' projects, Simply. She's next to the cast of Fresh Meat, and they all hang out together on the campus, which gives you a flavour of what life is like at the Sharp Project. It's not just making money. It's about building that community who create businesses that are successful, who employ people, who bring more people in, and that generates money in the economy, and you can have fun while you're doing it. So this is what our building looks like now. The Winter Garden, where we actually ran out of money and converted it later, which I'll talk about in a minute. That was where we used to hold all our events before we developed out our central campus. Important for us to encourage and create that event, because that's where our neighbours and clients meet each other, and that's where they develop that internal trading market, and that's where they buy from each other, and that's how the building itself becomes its own mini world of commerce. So within a year of fully opening, an independent economic impact study had to be commissioned because in part we were funded by European money. independent report showed that despite that recession, 92% of our tenants experienced increased turnover, 89% had increased their productivity, and 85% had developed new products and services since arriving at the Sharp project. 75% of the tenants in the survey had created new jobs, and we, as a collective, had added £21.4 million to the regional economy. The project cost just over £10 million to build. There are now 600 people working there, employing other people, paying rent, paying tax, driving forward the Manchester agenda. And these are just some of our clients' list, all mashed up together, those hardcore techie geeks, but kind of high-end profile actors you will see every day on network TV. And all this is part of the magical DNA that happens at the Sharp project. A post-industrial award-winning design that physically reflects its industrial heritage. It tells the story of where this part of Manchester came from, but it's changed the outlook of the place and the people who live there, who, until quite recently, have been left out looking in on a city shimmering with glossy corporate HQs, all skyward glass and architecturally manicured trees dressed in pretty, pretty P-lights, but their noses were pressed up against the glass because it was simply a step too far from East Manchester to the heart of that city. That means that young people who live in East Manchester don't feel part of that resurgence and regeneration at the heart of the city. And so we work very closely with schools and colleges to actually explain to those young people that this is no longer about having a job and pressing your nose at that window. It's about taking advantage of what's on your doorstep and saying, I will have my business there and I'll be employing my friends. And that's how we're going to drag them and the economy locally out of what has been years and years of despair. These big names who make big stuff at the Sharp project share all that belief. And that's a very important part of the Sharp project. BBC, Channel 4, ITV, City, Man United, the names on that list share what we believe in. They're part of that ethos. So they join in with us helping train and teach new talent by sharing their knowledge with our young people. And it's an important part of the Sharp project philosophy. Each and all of us have a moral duty to ensure that we skill up our young people. It is not a task just to be left to the educational establishment. So taking part is the second rule of the Sharp project. It's what we do. It's why we built the place in the first place. So how do you do that? There were three founding principles of the project. The physical space, which you can see. The creation of a destination with events and a reason to come to work and a reason to come, even if you didn't work there, so you can actually meet the people. And then what I called on a scrap of paper 7 years ago, Sharp Futures. Sharp Futures is now an independent social enterprise company, rocket-fueled with ambition by its amazing founder, the award-winning social entrepreneur, Rose Marley, who's here with us tonight. She seeds, nurtures, and grows a talent pool drawn from the local community, from that local postcode, for whom university was either a pipe dream that was never going to happen or a failed and expensive bad experience. Sharp Futures creates events like this, the annual Digital Teapot. It's an event inspired by International Women's Day, which gives young women the opportunity to learn how they can create businesses in the digital economy. It's oversubscribed each year. It is the epitome of the Sharp project. No barriers to entry, it's free. No class, race, or religious demarcation. It's all about collaboration and cooperation to one end, creating businesses and driving that economy. How to make money from your blog, run a cake business from the kitchen table, build your own YouTube channel, or learn how to run a global communications company. It's run entirely by the Sharp Futures Apprentices team. They also do the PR, the marketing, the front of house, and through training and teaching and sharing of knowledge, Rose will rent them out by the hour if your business needs to get its VAT receipts done or work a casting session. Many small creative companies can't afford to take an apprenticeship on. It's one of the flaws with the apprenticeship system, which in part is good. But a small 2-3-person company can't afford to take on the liability of an apprentice. But actually, they need to be able to skill up or staff up when they get a busy period. So the vehicle Rose and Sharp Futures delivers is the ability to rent out those young people who get real hand experience, can put it on their CV, and it makes them more employable in the future. And that's why the Sharp project isn't just about a building. It's always about the people. So, this is our campus, where we play, work, network, swap ideas, sell our wares, imagine, learn, all in one place. More stuff. This is the UK's biggest coder dojo, where kids as young as 8 learn how to code. Every month, it's oversubscribed. We sit watching parents' jaws drop as their 8-year-olds learn to make a tangerine sing. It might not sound important. One day, they'll be inventing some big Google-type company. This was originally the Winter Garden, and with all things sharp, like, we actually ran out of money at some point. And it was only when we proved the business was successful, quite rightly, that we were able to raise more public money and build this Green Screen Studio complex, where everything from the CGI you saw to commercial adverts to motion capture to apps are shot and made, both utilised by the tenants and by external client base as well. So this is it now, the Sharp Project, a place with a new postcode, a regenerated part of the city where in 2008 there was dereliction and tumbleweed blowing through an underused business park that sits behind us. And as the Sharp Project continues to evolve, in turn does so the whole physical area and its people. So from our fantastic campus caterer, which was set up by the girl who delivered sandwiches to the builders, who now has her own catering empire, to the two-man startup teams who started sitting on campus, moved to a shipping container, and now have a company with an international client base, and the amazing and outstanding apprentices from Sharp Futures. This was the first wave, now joined by 2013 intake. Front of house, digital runners, web designers, production accountants, all making the business run well and developing their own careers. We have many visitors at the Sharp Project, from as far afield as India and Australia and China and Russia and Mexico, and in particular, an awful lot of property developers in the first years who were intrigued by the Sharp Project. And they always used to ask, what is the yield per square foot? This is the yield. The businesses and the growth is the yield. The people development is the yield, because it was never about a building. The building was the conduit. So the project worked, and in time-honoured way, Manchester City Council and the fathers that be didn't say, phew, take a rest. They said, what's next? And what's next was the space project. You'd be very familiar with the methodology now. Get a really horrible building, flatten them as much as you can with a very large digger, use a very good architect and team. Don't hope that they will come just because you've built them. We had to undertake a detailed market analysis. We had to work out what we're very good at. And actually, this came about because we were very good in the North at making drama. We've been making award-winning drama for 60 years between the BBC and ITV Granada, and now joined by Channel 4 and extraordinary independent productions like Red. So we learnt what we were good at, and we set out to build the UK's freshest, newest drama production centre that was absolutely built from the perspective of the end user, but was also affordable, because no matter what you read, TV will always claim they have no money. So starting in spring 2013, we, with a very robust business case, we designed, demolished, dug through mud to create the Space Project, Manchester's own homegrown production stage hub. A shared vision, and this time, fortunately, a very dry summer. And there it is now, home to TV's top dramas, with construction space for sets, dressing rooms for cast, a canteen campus run by the amazing Amanda, and again a team of apprentices ready to meet and greet. 5 large stages, vast spaces inside a magic box, making magical TV. And out of that box, coming soon to your small box, a new BBC children's drama, a comedy cop show for Channel 4, an ITV appointment to view thriller, and a TV ad with not one but 2 camels because they needed a stunt. So there we go. From a deep and dark section, West Gorton in East Manchester, a second slice of industrial blighted space is creating a new buzz and a fresh sense of community pride in a part of the city left out at the very edge, now newly landscaped, loved and ready to develop Manchester's creative digital workforce. It is a physical new fixture on the Manchester skyline, a new way for a neighbourhood that isn't looking outside, looking in a Willy Wonka world way, but the people there are part of the growth and delivery and will share in the success. Leading to that which I touched on earlier, this is a new horizon for Manchester and a new vision for the North, with Manchester at its helm, recognising that all of our citizens have potential, and therefore we are all determined that no one will be left behind in the gold rush to chase those new jobs. We want to deliver that northern powerhouse that will even out the economic imbalance inherent in the UK system for decades. So we intend to invest in the new sunrise industries that will achieve this and create those new jobs, leading in the fields of science and technology and creativity. And that is the point of the projects like Sharp and Space, to fuel ambition, to develop talent, to help create that new youth. That is the yield. Thank you.
Thanks, Sue, for an incredible presentation. I'm going to open this up to the floor in a moment, but I do have one question for you. The Sharp project, the Space project, what's next? I understand Greater Manchester is looking for a mayor.
No, that's hardly a hard job. Continuing what we have achieved today, you can't just leave a building and say, that's it then. So we have an amazing team at the Sharp project, another new brand, a new team at the Space project. So it's about nurturing the talent there and helping them grow, helping them deliver to that business case, building a reputation for it both locally, nationally and internationally, speaking about it to an audience like this who hopefully will become our ambassadors and take the message out everywhere, and never stopping still. You're not allowed to stand still in Manchester. It's part of the contract you sign with them. Mm. You know, we, in order to drive forward, because we had to start from such a long place back, we just have to work harder, work faster, work smarter, and that will lead us to that new northern vision.
Mm-hmm. So every other time that I've asked you that over the last 8 years, I ask Sue what she's going to do next, and she says, I'm going to retire. Doesn't she, Brian? Whispering. So no, that's not on the agenda, is it, no?
Yeah, sometime, but actually, the last bit
every
I have to do...
Every time I see her after that, by the way, she's down, it's on site in a hard hat at the next building.
No, the bit I have to get right now is developing the next generation of talent, because I'm from the very old side of the business now, and it's incredibly important that we bring up the next generation. So you, Rose, Rachel, James, Alistair, Gary, the guys here, Carol from one of our tenants here, the next generation already get the vision. It's just kind of helping with them be brave enough to take the risks, to take us forward. It's hard taking risks. You can take risks when you're older. When you're young and you're trying to build a career and reputation, you don't want to make a mistake. I've made loads of mistakes. Make the mistakes. Nobody dies, it doesn't matter. Actually, it's the fear of making the mistake that holds people back. So if you're given a challenge that you think it's a step too far, take the step. What's the worst thing that can happen? They'll give you another building.
I'm so glad I'm in the young generation. Thanks for that. I'm going to open this up to the floor now. The handsome young gentleman with the beard, who also happens to be my boss and pay my wages.
You said that you've had a lot of people come to look at the Sharp project. And I just wondered, do you get a sense that other cities are going to follow the lead and try and do something similar? And if so, are there any examples that you know about that you could share with us?
Yes. Liverpool City Council have been several times, and I've, I think, now put a tender out for someone to build studios. The most recent in between is Falmouth University phoned yesterday to say they are very keen to develop some kind of facility in Cornwall in order to keep talent, creative talent in Cornwall, rather than export it to, obviously, capital cities like London. And so Birmingham, we've obviously worked very closely with Belfast in helping them formulate the kind of second wave post the Game of Thrones conversion of the Paint Hall, which is in the Titanic Quarter. Everyone's been to see the Sharp project. And I say two things to them. Yes, very happy to help and collaborate and show and tell and show you what we built the building. But for them to go away with that takeaway that it's not about a building. It's absolutely not about a building. It's about finding the talent, sometimes from places you wouldn't normally look to, and actually teaching the talent, bringing the knowledge base of that talent up and developing the talent. And that's why Rose and Sharp Futures is the most important thing about the Sharp and Space project, seeding, nurturing, growing that talent. We have to grow. Our sector has to grow its own talent because we're growing so fast in creative and digital industries. We can't access the people quick enough. And then when they're in the business, the skill needs to change. So it's constantly learning, constantly challenging, constantly teaching, constantly sharing, bringing the talent with us. And that's sometimes, I think, not all the people who come to see us take that away. Because the emphasis, it's more fun to build a building than it is to try and recruit apprentices and take them through quite a lot of pain barriers.
Jenny Freeman, I'd just like to ask how the project was funded in a little more detail than you were able to give earlier. Thank you.
The City Council already owned both buildings, the Sharp project and the Space project, and they'd been strategic purchases as part of the East Manchester overarching strategy as to what they will do with the land development. But again, in a recession, there was no money to develop them out, so no property development companies wanted to come in a joint venture to do anything with the sites. So they were left, locked up and left, sort of safe kept for a rainy day. So when I was involved in the Sharp project, there was a building, very little budget. There was £5 million set aside to do a light refurbishment, but the asbestos in the building took £2 million just to take out the building and repair the roof. And so then we had to create a business case for the European Regional Development Fund, which Gary over there aided and abled magnificently. And we had to do a really, really, really tough business case that had to be tested. So there was a market analysis as to what the demand, what would we do with the building, how long would it take, how much money would, you know. We also had to agree to create job outputs, which we smashed in the first year, our job outputs. And so all that cocktail came together with the city, ERDF, I think was £10.46 million. And as I said, the GVA, after 18 months, I think, the report was £21.4 million. So pretty good investment. Eddie never really gives me enough money.
Do you do personal finances as well?
No, so. Sadly not. Yeah.
Now, there was a gentleman around here, did you say? Yeah. Sorry, yeah.
You mentioned the Northern Powerhouse, which is a very interesting moment at the moment for the North, and there's lots of stuff being talked about it. What would you think are the more elusive things that they could do, apart from just the obvious things like transport, to link up like Liverpool and Manchester and Leeds? Because that's the problem with the North compared to London. London is a global city. But if those three cities could link up in ways, and maybe you probably have a lot of knowledge of the more elusive things that you could do to actually bring those together and make it drive it more forward.
The Northern Powerhouse isn't just about the transport infrastructure, although that's incredibly important because it will create jobs in construction, will bring money to the economy. So, yes, that's good. And that's mostly what you tend to read in newspapers. But the biggest prize in the devolution of budget and responsibility to Greater Manchester is the skills budget. Billions and billions of pounds in money to be spent on skills. Because, strange though it may seem, to date, the skills agenda has been driven for the North by London, who actually look from a very London narrow perspective on what the skill is required in the South East and not the North. We have different demands in the North. We were the place that has developed, you know, out graphene as a new applied material, for which the Chancellor has given the city a great deal of money. But we have, you know, all those hundreds and hundreds of opportunities for jobs in the creative and digital. We are brilliant at life sciences. We have an amazing array of clever scientists in our universities. So we absolutely know the kind of skill sets we will need going forward. But I refer back to the early point. You know, these will be graduates coming out of universities and postgrads who have got bioscience and applied materials degrees, and that's great, and we want to keep them and retain them. So we need to create those industries to retain that talent. But at the same time, we absolutely have to recognise there's a great swathe of Indigenous Mancunians, Northerners, who didn't and won't go to university, and we have to upskill them quickly in order to make sure we can attract the businesses that will require those skills. And one of the easy quick wins is coding. In Estonia, they teach kids coding at 7 years old. You know, why can't we have a Manchester education curriculum and do that? So it's not just about transport. It's about being masters of our own destiny, having an intimate understanding of what we need to do to drive our economy forward.
Hello. Julian Lindley, University of Hertfordshire. Very interesting talk, and it appears that one of the key things which we can learn is what you've done is, if I get it right, is to blur the boundaries of what business is, in that it's not about space, it's not about people, it's not about boundaries between one company and another, it's about sharing. And maybe, I'd be interested in your opinion, maybe the next step is to put that out to the business world, which appears under traditional paradigms of way they operate, are having trouble, and yet your model is very dynamic and it's very successful. So maybe the next move is to explain and explore with people like the CBI and business schools? I'd be interested in your views. Thank you.
I always knew what I wanted to do with the businesses inside the Sharp project. I knew that before we really knew what to do with the building. And it was based on the premise that I've worked in the creative industries for 30 more years, and no one's ever had any money. So when there was a great change to put production companies into the independent sector, yes, some became very, very rich, but most just failed. Because generally creative people aren't that great at running businesses. Not because they haven't got business skills, but they just haven't got time to be running the business. When they're trying to write a pitch, get on a train in London to go and see a commissioning editor, go back, look after the kids, find a place to rent. It's really hard running a small business. It's really, really difficult. So how could you make running a small business easier? How could you make the money go further? And I absolutely believe then, and still completely believe, that you can. It's better to knock on your neighbour's next door and say, can I borrow your edit suite, than go buy one that sits in a dusty corner till you get a commission. So the whole emphasis was, collaborate with your next door neighbour to borrow equipment, borrow a suit to go and see the bank manager, learn from what they do, share an accountant, share a researcher, share a team, share a car, share anything that actually reduces your cost base in order for your business to prosper. And that's just a good business maxim for anybody, isn't it? Why spend a lot of money on stuff you're not going to use when you can borrow it from the guy next door? And people scoffed at that idea because people thought everyone would be very protective of their own bit of business in a kind of I'm not letting you see my homework way. And in fact, it was completely the opposite. Everybody was incredibly picking and selecting who came in was probably partly a result of that. Everyone was incredibly happy to collaborate. So now we have collaborative events on the campus that Rose and the apprentices team are on, and people pile in and share their knowledge. We also did some very clever things that Rose does, which is if we have someone, a big business, like, for instance, the NHS, which happens to be one of our clients, come to us, two case studies, and say, we would like to build an app that helps people who now have their own budget to buy the health provision to develop what very specific needs they need. But they have to fill this complicated form in, and it's beyond them. So can your clever tenants invent something? So through Sharp Futures, Rose then puts out a tender to all the tenants. Their tenants picture it. There's a beauty parade. The client picks it. Rose and the team manage that process. And actually, the NHS got a brand new app. They were able to pick from a myriad of very clever, talented young people, and people who now have their own budget, use an app on an iPad, which they can actually speak into to explain what their needs are. So that's a big, huge organisation, the NHS, coming to a very small part of East Manchester, to a team run by apprentices, to a tenant base who live in a shipping container, who've helped actually solve a big corporate problem. So, yes, I agree.
Time for just one or two more.
Hello, my name's Patricia Seeks. You spoke a little bit about risk, and whilst this looks amazing now, I'm guessing it was quite scary at certain points. And I wondered if you could talk a bit about what you thought the risks were and what kept you awake at night apart from rain.
I think you can tell which of the audience members were involved in the Sharp project. Yeah. Because
this is Eddie Smith, who is the head of regeneration at that time. So, I lost lots of sleep about it. I mean, my family were testament to that. I was never really worried about it failing, ever, actually. But I was the only one that never really thought it would fail. Look at my team on the back row. We've got an economic think tank in Manchester, and the boss, the chief executive, that came to see the building when we're in the building mode. We're just finishing it. And he'd been very sceptical of the whole project, as in fact a lot of people were very sceptical about it. And he came and he said, this is amazing. He said, how did you know it was going to be a success? And you go, well, I didn't, I just hoped. So, because if you defer back to your fear base, you'll never do anything, you'll never go forward. So, but then you take very practical steps, don't you? You have a great architect. You have a really good project manager. You keep a very tight control of the budget. You keep a tight control of the contractors and the builders. You do a really good, robust business case, and you test it and test and test again. And you do a great part of market analysis, and then you get out and you sell it. You sell it so that you know the day you open the doors, you will have clients coming in. And we did a very strange and, again, risky thing at the Sharp project, and again at Space. Normally when you sell out space, you would go to an estate management company or a property development company And you would put an advert on the website and they produce a glossy brochure and they bring people to see it, and there'd be, you know, property estate magazines would do. We didn't do any of that because, A, that's very costly, and, B, it was utterly the wrong message about the Sharp project. So we did it all by social media, all by being on stage talking, all by networking, all by Twitter feeds, by Facebook. We utilised all the very things that we said we could deliver inside the Sharp project. We use that as our mechanism and method of delivering the message. And so we reached the people we really wanted to speak to in a much more effective way than going through, you know, a guy in a suit and a property company saying, what's your yield per square foot? Which, if you say that to a creative company, they're just, you may as well talk Serbo Croat. They have no idea what you're talking about at all. So, yes, it was very risky. It was probably more risky for the city. And, you know, I was very, very, very fortunate to have a great team and to have an enormous amount of political support from both Sir Richard Leese, the leader of the City Council, and Sir Howard Bernstein, the chief executive, who are just visionary leaders. They just are extraordinary visionary people who have rebuilt the city since the IRA, you know, blew it up in 1996 and then went for the Olympic Games and got the Commonwealth Games. And, you know, and then they employ people like Eddie, who's now director of strategy, who just go for the bigger picture. Just, it's not just about, can I get a Marks and Spencers to come, you know, and build a shop on this corner? It's actually about, how can I work in a collaboration with New York? And let's bring the mayor over for tea. And that happens all the time in Manchester. It's just normal day-to-day stuff, which is why they never let you sit on your laurels, because it's like a kind of Faustian pact with the devil, Manchester. Once you make it, there's no going back.
One quick one.
How did you get the money to get a team together? Or did you build a building first and work from there?
Gosh, that's such a hard question, because I still haven't worked out how we did it, which is part of the problem. The builders were paid by the money that came with the City Council money and the ERDF money. So there was a budget to build the building. So that was it. But there wasn't any budget to employ anybody. So
you convinced them to give you the land and the money?
Well, the land was already owned by the city, and they sort of have an embryonic idea about it. But the property crash happened, and the people who had been originally involved sort of fell by the wayside. So the building was there, and the contract was there, and the architect was there, but there wasn't a kind of, what is it? What is it we're trying to achieve here in terms of a business, and why? And what will be the economic impact on it? And that's the bit that I came into, I proposed, and then the city said, yes, go build it. But, I mean, I'll tell you, it's a short answer to that very difficult question. Rose Marley, I met because we both used to know Anthony Wilson, who was a legendary luminary in Manchester. And when Tony died, Rose and a bunch of people decided to do a 24-hour conversation in the city to honour Tony's memory. So they hired a tent in the middle of the city, and a whole bunch of people who had all been in that movie, 24-hour party people, rocked up. And we all talked for 24 hours about Tony, the future. Malcolm was there. And Rose was the kind of part of the brains behind that. She was coordinating the event, and she asked me to come and be a speaker. And I thought, she's really smart. I really like her. So I went to see her, and she had an office in another part of town. I said, look, I'm building this building. Why don't you move your business to my building? And she did. And, of course, once I'd got it in the building where she was running her own business, I said, why don't you help me now run this business? And there you go now. And here she is running both.
Yeah. What's your plan now? Are you going to franchise this idea to the rest of Britain, or have you got, you know, ideas for Europe? Or
I think it's a great idea, and I'll leave my card on the table afterwards. Yeah.
Perhaps you can pick that up at the drinks reception downstairs. I'm going to wrap up there, but thank you very much for your contributions this evening. For now, would you welcome me and congratulate him once again, the RSA Bicentennial Medalist, Sue Woodward.
Thanks, Sam. Congratulations.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, why not download our free app to access video and audio files on the go? Just visit our website, therSA.org, and follow the links to the RSA Vision mobile app.